Hi, welcome to this incredible podcast episode of your favorite podcast, People of Tech, with your favorite podcast host, Shenis Teriyaki. Today's guest is Ed Soho. He is the CTO of Lenovo Worldwide. And he talks about his crazy life and his crazy life advice for us, young people. Enjoy listening to this podcast. It was incredible talking to him. And Ed, if you're hearing this, thank you so much. This was one of the best talks I ever had. Have fun. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to our podcast.
My pleasure.
We will start right away.
Already? We just met.
I know, right? But, you know, high school students, we are direct.
Huh? Okay.
What's your current job title?
The current job title, it is a multi-worded title of Worldwide CTO, Global Accounts, Innovation, and Transformation.
That sounds so important.
It is, and it isn't. It's a sort of a title that uses the words to create complexity, a little bit of curiosity, and these are accepted words of descriptions in a business.
Okay.
Right? And to me, that's where I'm kind of like a wolf in sheep's clothing. So at the Phantom of the Opera, the key scene is when he rips the mask off. I'm not really a CTO.
I see. Well, what did you originally study?
I studied pool halls. I dropped out of college.
Wow.
After my first year.
Okay, story time.
In high school, I cut 80% of my classes. Never went. Somehow, I got a scholarship to the University of San Francisco, a Jesuit college. And the first year, I was like, these kids are way too smart. What am I doing here? So after a year, like, uncomfortable, right, and unwilling, I dropped out. And then I started to play pool. And then I started to pick up another game called Three Cushion Billiards. It's a different level of pool playing. And I ended up playing that game for 3 years, every day but Christmas. Traveled all over the world, learning how to, you know, compete, things of that nature. Ranked number 6 in the world a long time ago. And all the training I ever got came from my father, who immigrated from China with a middle school education in the late 40s. And he raised 6 boys, right?
Wow.
And first four sons, 1 year apart, right? And so in my LinkedIn profile, my education is what I call the University of Pete's Market, my dad's corner grocery store.
Oh.
That's where I learned everything. My dad taught me everything you would ever need to know about life, right? And so I asked him when I was 16, I said, Dad, what do you want from your sons? And I thought he was going to say, you know, go to college, get a degree, be a doctor, a lawyer, Indian chief or something. And all he said was he hesitated and he goes, be a good boy, be a good man, be a good father. That was it. So now when I have conversations with folks, I always ask them, be good. Everything else follows if you do it right.
I might cry. I might cry. But how did you end up in the tech world?
So I played pool. Then the girl I took to the senior ball, she called me up. She goes, Ed, you can't do this the rest of your life. You have to go legit. So I got a temporary warehouseman job, and I was moving magazines or books like you see in the shelves behind us, right? And I was doing, at the end of the line, all the books would come, you had to put them in carts. And there were 40 carts. Each cart weighed 2,000 pounds. So 80,000 pounds of moving material on the carts, that was my job, right? It looks like, oh my God, am I going to do this the rest of my life? I don't have a degree. What do I do? So what happened was the machine that was wrapping or strapping all of the magazines and books, once in a while it would jam. And when it jammed, the union members would call the general manager because union members don't fix machines. So the union the general manager had to run out because no one's working. So he would unjam the machine, and I would watch. I watched him do it three times. I go, oh, I think I got this. So the next time the machine jammed, I waited for the team to call on the phone. As soon as they hung up, I jumped on the machine. I unjammed it. And the general manager came out and goes, why'd you call me? The machine's not broken. And they said, and they, all the union guys looked at me and they pointed and go, he did it. And the general manager goes, you want to be full-time? So I went from a warehouseman to a foreman to a forklift driver to a truck driver. And then one day, as a truck driver, I'm walking into the general manager. And I said, George, I feel really guilty. He goes, why? I said, I'm only working 3 hours a day. I figured out the system. I know what. He goes, you're a teamster. You're set for life. Don't worry about it. I said, George, I feel really bad. He goes, what do you want? I go, you know, all I ever see you do, George, around this warehouse and distribution center is you're going from one end of the warehouse to the other. I said, how do you expect to grow your business? He goes, well, it's really kind of hard. I don't have time. I said, what if you had time? He goes, and how would I get that? I said, you should have a manager trainee. And he goes, what a good idea. I said, while you're thinking about it, I said, I'd like to be considered. And he laughed. He goes, Ed, you're not qualified. I said, I know. And he goes, well, why? I said, bring anybody you want in for competition. I'll beat them.
Period.
Yeah. 2 weeks later, I'm called into George's office, and there's a young man, Al Campasi, big, strapping Italian young man, 2 degrees, very smart kid. And George goes, gentlemen, we have a manager trainee program. There's no formality to it. At the end of 90 days, one of you will be the manager trainee. The other will be a truck driver. I started laughing, and George goes, what's so funny? I said, I'm already a truck driver. He goes, get out of here. So what happened was, over the 90 days, I was showing up at 4:30 in the morning, and I'd leave at 7:30 to come back at 8. Al thought I was coming in at 8. So by the end of the 90 days, we were called into George's office. And he looked at Al, and he goes, congratulations, Al. You're a truck driver. Al goes,
that's so mean.
What? And he goes, here are your truck keys. So he handed him the truck keys, and I said, hey, Al, what number's on that truck key? He goes, 72. I said, it grinds in second gear. You have to double shift. And he just goes away. And George goes, you're it. I go, thanks for choosing me, George. He goes, I didn't choose you. I said, what? He goes, the team chose you. The team all voted and said, this is the guy we want to work with.
That's
right. So,
so cool.
George goes, we never talked salary, did we? I said, no. He goes, I can't pay you Teamster wages. Back then, it was like $60,000 a year with overtime and like. And he goes, so your salary is $15,000 a year? He goes, a year. And it was a long pause. I said, I'll take it. He goes, what? I said, I'll take it. He goes, do you know how much? I said, George, I know how to count. I know how much less that is. He goes, so why would you take it? I said, in order for me to go up, I have to start down. I'll earn my way up. He goes, damn it. I said, what's the matter? He goes, I lost the bet. I said, what's the bet? He goes, I bet everyone you wouldn't take the job. I said, rule number one, George, don't bet against me. So I became a manager trainee, learned the systems, computers, I've self-taught. And then a company in New Hampshire asked me to be, I interviewed for a sales position. So I sent my resume in. The vice president called me on the phone. He goes, hey, we're in Denver. We'll be in LA tomorrow. We'll come to you in San Francisco day after tomorrow. I said, who's we? And he goes, the president. I said, oh, cool. And I said, you have any business in San Francisco? He goes, no, we're just going to come see you. I said, why don't I save you some money? I said, I'll meet you in L.A. Tell me what hotel you're staying at. I'll buy you a drink. Let's do the interview. And he goes, okay. I said, how about 8 o'clock? He goes, okay. So I hung up the phone. I said, never been on a plane before. I went to a stationery store back then, bought a brand new briefcase. When I left the stationery store, I took the briefcase out of the bag, I threw it on the ground and kicked it around, make it look used. Flew down, having drinks, and the president, really nice guy, MBA from Tuck in Dartmouth, right, MBA. And he goes, Ed, you seem like a really nice guy. I said, Kevin, that's what you tell dates. What's your point? He goes, this is a sales position. I said, I know. He goes, you don't have any sales background. I said, I know. He goes, it's a sales position. I said, Kevin, I'm going to ask you a question. He goes, okay. I said, is the goal of a salesperson to get in front of a decision maker? He goes, oh, yeah. I said, I assume you're a decision maker. He goes, yeah. And the VP of sales is laughing, right? And he goes, well, okay. But we sell computers, mini computers off mainframes and the like. And he goes, you have no computer background. I said, I know. He goes, we sell computers. Actually, Kevin, you don't sell computers. He goes, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. He goes, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. And he goes, tell me what I sell. I said, you sell solutions that run on a computer. Those solutions are in an industry I know inside out. And I can talk to decision makers about their problems and your solutions. So who would you rather have talking to a potential customer? Somebody that knows computers and knows nothing about the business, or somebody that knows the business and you can teach me computers? And he goes, when can you start? So that's how I got started my career in computers.
Wow.
I'm not qualified, never have been. Every job I've ever had, not qualified.
But this whole thing takes a lot of confidence. Where does it come from?
Confidence is part of it. I think sometimes just being fearless is the other, right? So I have three stages of fear that I always share. When I was in sales, I was fearful. I was fearful of asking questions I did not have answers to. A good salesperson always asks questions and they have the answer, which means you're limited in what you're talking about. Right? So there's a smaller scope, et cetera, et cetera. So I made a point to fear less, two words. To fear less, I started to read more. Business journals, science journals, all sorts of different topics and subjects. I became very well-rounded with all sorts of different things. So now I started to fear less in having conversations because I had some insights and some perspectives that I would share. I became more capable, more competent, and more confident. So my conversations changed a lot to the point I went from fearful to fearless to fearless. When you arm yourself with insights, perspectives that people aren't prepared for, you're actually teaching them. You're giving them new insights and perspectives they never even thought about. So there are two books not in my library, The Laws of Physics and The Laws of Gravity.
Why is that?
Because they constrain you. There are limits. I don't like limits and I don't like constraints.
Wow, I love that mindset so much. I also hate physics.
Well, sometimes we're,
and math.
We're given rules, right? And sometimes you have to comply with the rules. But I think stretching the rules, I think looking at these things differently and openly gives people the power to see things in a whole different way. And I think that's where the magic really lies, is your willingness to be brave. In my talk today, it's about being bold. But bold is an acronym, right? You have to believe it. You have to own it. You have to live it. And then you got to drive it. When you're bold, it becomes very empowering. And people feel it, right? There's an old phrase like, I'm going to that light at the end of the tunnel, right? And I always tell people, that's not your light. How do you become your own light? And then how do you take that light and shine it on others? How do you become so fearless that you give away your power? You share insights and perspectives, and you give people a gift, right? And someone said, I gave him a gift of a story, he goes, but I didn't bring you anything. I said, that's not the objective of a gift. A gift is meant to be given freely and openly. with no expectations of a return. And they go like, whoa. So when you have conversations, you always bring a gift.
You bring a big gift to this whole podcast at this point. This is also an AI podcast. Do you think women and men are equally involved in the development of AI? This is a hard, sorry, we went from storytelling your whole life to this whole AI
irrespective
debate.
Of gender, it's mindset, right? It is the mindset that is working with AI. It could be a woman who has X number of experiences, her prompts, her queries are a little bit different, or the way she develops with her algorithms and bias, all that's different. All of it is really around diversity, but diversity of experience.
I see.
Gender is part of it, but diversity of experience, irrespective of gender, is really the key. So when I build teams, they are a mix of misfits, right? And a woman came in interviewing for a position on my team in one of my startups. And she came from the World Bank. But she wanted to try business development, kind of a elevated sales role. And she started, she handed me her resume. She goes, well, Ed, and her name's Maria. She goes, well, Ed, I don't have, I said, Maria, I really don't care what you don't have. She goes, what? I said, I care about what you do have. I said, so let's change this. What did you do last summer? She goes, oh, I was in Nicaragua. This was years ago. I said, doing what? She goes, we were organizing against the Sandinistas. I said, the terrorist group. She goes, yes. I said, tell me the story. 10-minute story. And I took the resume, I looked at it, I said, well, Maria, this interview's over. Thank you for the story. She goes, what? I go, when can you start? She goes, what? I said, Maria, I can teach you business development. I cannot teach fearless. Join the team. Teach us to be fearless. Can you do that? And she smiled ear to ear. She goes, yes. So when you build teams, when you work with people, find their strength. Don't point out their weaknesses.
So you also think that everyone, besides tech knowledge and all that stuff, can work in AI?
They can work in AI, but you have to have a heart and a brain and courage. Which means it's the Wizard of Oz. Some people don't know if they have the brain. Some people don't think they have a heart. Some people don't think they have the courage. It took someone from Kansas to help them find themselves. Dorothy. Right? So how do we help people find themselves? Find that strength inside that they've always had, but no one ever gave them permission to enlighten them, to engage them, and to empower them. What we want to do is give people, everyone, this. So there's the democratization. That's a fancy word for everyone should have equal access. This AI phenomenon, like what we have with the internet and all these other things, there is a have and have not. And we're getting faster and faster towards something like that. And I really don't like it. What I want to do is to have AI only be a technology. That's it. It's like, I want electricity only to be available, but when I plug in my appliance, my refrigerator, my espresso machine, my television, those are bespoke experiences or bespoke appliances powered by electricity or AI. AI is a technology. It is not the answer, right? It powers answers through experiences. So what is the experience you're trying to, basically create? Right, so people talk about ROI, return on investment. Everyone uses that to justify not to do something. It's about ROE, return on experience. What is the experience you're trying to get? Once we get the experience, what did we learn from that experience? What can we change to enhance it? And then when that changes, what did we learn from that? So life is the same thing. What are the new experiences we keep adding to our quiver, right, with all the different arrows of high school, university, degrees, jobs, and then life? How do you balance all that, right? Everybody, the younger generation, they say about Gen Z a lot, right? They want work-life balance.
I know.
Right? But no, it's but the thing is, there's always going to be work-life balance, but the fulcrum moves. the fulcrum is in the middle of that seesaw. Sometimes the fulcrum moves more to the left, certain stages of your life. Other times it moves to the other side. So your work-life balance changes on the fulcrum. What are you trying to do at your stage in life? The things you do, the things, the people you share your life with, things at work, they all change. There's no, as people think about, when I was asked by Stanford, they said, what was your strategy for your career? I said, I'm an accidentalist, right? I accidentally bump into things. But when you do, you make the most of it. There's no need to apologize that I was a truck driver, a warehouseman, or I cleared tables at a restaurant. I love that, right? The only way to find yourself is to do things you never expected and never qualified for.
And what do you think was your biggest mistake in your whole story, or especially with AI?
The biggest mistake, and I shared this on stage in Madrid. There were 2,000 people in the audience, and the typical questions are asked, right? And I have a notebook with all the questions in advance. And so the interviewer was named Nacho Mateo. And he goes, well, Ed, we have all these questions. I said, look, I have them right here. He goes, yeah. I said, let's dispense with that. I said, ask away. And he goes, what? I go, let's show the audience what we can really do, right? So he was asking some very interesting questions. The last one he asked was, what was your biggest failure? And what did you learn from it? I said, my biggest failure, I said, I can give you what everybody usually says, but I'm not going to give you that. My biggest failure was my failure in the relationship with my wife. I sacrificed everything for work. And I was traveling all over the world, 45 weeks a year. And if it were not for my wife's bedrock courage, we would not be celebrating our 45th wedding anniversary this August. So everyone in this room, do not sacrifice your personal relationship. You will fail, and it will fail hard. Right? And I had more people come like, whoa. I go, it's personal, right? These are the things. And if, when you start to have conversations like this, you have to open your heart and open your mind, because that's the only way things come in.
I might cry part two. That's so inspiring, especially we talk about AI, but you also bring like the personal and the heart, the thing you talked about, the heart side. It's so important.
The heart is the key to everything.
I feel like we use humanity in this whole debate.
So
sometimes,
yeah. They say, you know, a few years ago they say data is the new oil, right? That things makes things move. AI is the new electricity. Trust is the new fusion, right? So if you don't trust things, you're not going to use it. So all the things that we talk about, these fancy AI algorithms and prompts and, oh my gosh, Geekville. The ones who stand up and stand out simplify complex opportunities. They use storytelling as their framework to help people understand things. So if there were recommendations I would make, one, be a great storyteller. Read all sorts of stories, but then you put your own twist on them, right? So when I talk about AI, I actually start by saying AI sucks. And it sucks power, water, and cooling like you wouldn't believe. Then it sucks time, money, and resources you wish you had. Years ago, there used to be a genie. You rub the lamp the right way, genie pops up, gives you 3 wishes. Today's genie can only give you 2 wishes. And so I said, why only 2? I said, budget, right? And
money.
Yeah. I said, so when you only have 2 wishes, you have to be careful what you wish for. Because if you wish hastily, you use the second wish to fix it. In the movie with Tom Hanks, the movie Big, he was at an amusement park with his peers. He was too short to make the ride, the fast ride. He was embarrassed in front of the girl that he had a liking to. So he was so dismayed. He went around the amusement park and found AI, Zoltar. He asked AI, Zoltar, to be Big. Zoltar had no context to what Big meant. So he just made him because the prompt wasn't expansive enough. So he made Tom Hanks 6 feet tall with a 12-year-old brain. All through the movie, he's suffering through the experiences of that dynamic. And at the end of the movie, he was seeking AI, Zoltar, to go back. So with AI, you have to be careful what you ask for. You have to be very prescriptive. But to do that, you have to have a lot of different experiences. And from those experiences, you're able to kind of share perspectives. And from those perspectives, you have context. When you have context, you build nuance. When you have nuance, you have syntax. All of these things are combined, right? AI is powerful, but it can be misused and abused.
Do you think we should trust human or people that work, especially with AI, that it's going to be okay?
No.
Oh. Well.
No, because there should be guardrails. Who are watching the guardians, right? So if there are governments that give the framework, they have guardrails. What is the right amount? So Sam Altman 3 years ago gave mankind, the industry, ChatGPT, AI. Sam Altman is the equivalent of Prometheus. Prometheus stole fire from Zeus. Zeus did not want mankind to have fire because he couldn't control it. Bad boy Prometheus stole fire, gave it to mankind. Mankind, everybody had a match, right? Zeus punished Prometheus for eternity. Sam Altman is Prometheus. Everyone, ChatGPT, can now make a wish with AI. So there are consequences if you don't know what you're asking for, like I shared about Tom Hanks. So when you start thinking about consequences, match AI, when I was young, I was a pyromaniac. I love starting fires. My younger brother, we were both the same. So we found a box of matches. We said 6 matches each. Who could burn the biggest hole in mom's lace curtain with one match? We had AI in our hand. We had a match. 12 holes later,
oh,
I won, by the way. 12 holes later, we pull the curtain back. And we go, oh, my God, oh, my God. Hope Ma, first thing my mom does come home, pulls the curtain, 12 holes.
Oh.
The story is there are consequences to matches that we didn't even think about because we knew how to strike a match. We didn't know how to manage the match.
Do you think it also takes a new mindset from, like, the end users, the whole, you know, the whole world, basically?
It's the mindset, but it's the ability to give you this much power. In the old Spider-Man movie, with great power comes great responsibility. It's the same thing.
I see. 3 years from now, will there still be ThinkPads with, like, apps? Or do you think there's going to be just one AI agent? You know, AI agent is the whole no debate and all that stuff. So do you think there's just going to be one AI agent who does everything?
We're going to have something similar to, you know, a persona that we carry with us, that works with us, that sees things with us, that builds contextual services and data offerings, things of that nature. And it'll be smart enough to be careful with the match and then bold enough to give me new things to think about. Because if we rely on things because the things know who we are, we don't grow from that. So how do you become an accidentalist? How do you find new things that will challenge you? When I go to a hardware store, right, I just wander the aisles. There are things that just pop up. I do the same thing in bookstores. Some people go into a place and they go, I'm going to get this. Then they walk out. The biggest opportunities are the ones you never planned for. The ones where you just turn around the corner. There's an old movie called Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow, right? All it takes is 2 seconds to change your life. AI doesn't do that. AI predicts your life. I want it to be unpredictable.
That's such a powerful mindset. Mm. So we also do a lot of, you know, orientation for students. Mm. A lot of students, high school students especially, are listening. How can we get that powerful mindset? In a world where we have to sit 8 hours in our high school, we are not always brave enough to drop out. Mm-hmm. And we also want to make you know, you talked about your parents. We mm-hmm. also want to make our parents proud. And mm-hmm. you also talked about maybe being a doctor or a lawyer, mm-hmm. as my parents want me to be a doctor.
Okay. I get it. Okay.
But how can we get that powerful mindset to just get into something that we never thought about? You know, I put my answers away because you're way too inspiring for my answers. I need more of that inspiring stuff. Yeah.
So it's interesting. There are lives that we live to meet others' expectations, to make them happy, right? Make
parents,
them proud.
Yeah,
I get that. And then, you know, every time I came back home, I said, Mom, I got a new job. She goes, again? Can't you just stay in one company? Because I counted how many different business cards I had with different titles and different companies. I counted 38.
Oh, damn.
One, a lot of jobs. Two, can't hold them. Three, amazing experiences, right? So if I were to, you know, share a perspective, I'm not going to give advice. I'll share a perspective, which is try different things. Try as many different things as you can. Understand what the normal everyday person goes through. We can have privilege of going to a school, right? Get accreditations, great to get a job, big office, and all that. But if you don't know the common person, oh, it's a shame. It really is. You know, when I used to play pool, I sat down next to this guy. He was like 85 years old. His name was Joe Valva. No one wanted to sit next to him. And he's just sitting there like a little curmudgeon, right? A little Yoda. And I sat next to him, and I found out why no one wanted to sit next to him. When he talked, he spit in your face.
Oh.
But I learned so much from him. And I made a point to talk to someone that no one else wanted to talk to. I took a job that no one else wanted, right? And I think the more experiences you have in your life, in your career, in your personal life, all these different experiences, the benefits are like this financial algorithm, compound interest. So when you, at 18 years old, let's say, you set aside $50 a month for 30 years. With a rate of return of 7%, it's $1 million. Because the building of the value goes up on top of what the interest builds on top. And it just magically compounds. So how do you build a compound life? How do you try different things and get value back? Sometimes the value will not come right away. It's okay. Because when the time comes, it'll show.
Do you have a passion?
My passion is having conversations with people. I live for that. I love having conversations. Because one, I learn things. Two, I give away things. And three, there are some magical things that happen. And what happens is that conversation I have with someone, they share it with someone else.
I sure will do.
Yeah. And that's my goal in life, right? I used to be a taker, right? Alex Grant wrote a book, Give and Take. There are givers in the world. There are takers in the world. I was a taker for a long time. All I did when I was in sales, I would take the order, da-da-da-da-da. I would fill my vessel every quarter, but it would be empty because I had to fill it again. So I was on this treadmill of certain types of behavior, get the order no matter what. I found out that it was lacking in sharing and working with people. So I became a conscientious seller. So whenever I sold, I would say to the client, this product is not for you. It's like that old scene in Star Wars where Obi-Wan was telling the stormtroopers, this is not the droid you're looking for. Same thing. What you want to do is be honest, right? When you do, great things happen. And so it's a very interesting, I wouldn't call it a dilemma. It's more of an odyssey, right? Like Homer, right? He's trying to get home. So where's home? It's wherever you are.
Part three of my crying. You say you don't want to give advice.
No.
You sharing your perspective.
I just share my experiences. That's it. What you take out of it is up to you.
You know, I saw a quote today.
Yeah.
You're never going to lose if experience is your goal.
And it's a wise one. It's one that I live with every day. Everything is about the experience, right? Whether, and the thing is, sometimes you're not prepared. and you feel like I'm faking it, right? I'm going to fake it till I make it, all those things. Just get on stage, for crying out loud, right? It doesn't really matter. And you know, it's funny, when I first started doing public speaking just like 5 years ago, I am the biggest introvert you can ever find. At a party, I'm just standing by the punch bowl. That's it.
Are you lying?
No.
I feel like you're lying at this point.
I am so shy, it's not even funny.
Oh my right? God.
I won't ask for directions. All guys do that. But it's kind of a funny thing how I do it. And when people come up, then I open up. Right? Because they're opening up, which means I can do it. If I'm just expressing my opinion, you should need to. No. It's not advice. It's just perspectives. And the more you share perspectives, which is your own, it becomes authentic. So if you're not authentic, people smell it right away. Right? And if you're not humble, people see it. They feel it. So the whole thing is to find that power. That power is just being yourself. And to do that, you have to experience so many things, even failures, especially failures. I failed more than you can imagine. Been fired a few times, right? Been laid off, all those things. All that does is just creates new facets of the diamond that I am. There are rough diamonds, and there are diamond cutters. Diamond cutters create color, clarity, and the ability to have the diamond shine. And that shining of a diamond is more facets. What are the different things that add color, cut, and clarity? That's life.
And how do you handle failures? Failures?
Yeah.
Is there something you tell yourself, a mantra or something that gives you power when you are like, you know, we talked about experience, but experience are always rough.
Yeah, they are.
And okay, it's experience and you learn. Okay, but in this moment, for me, I just want to cry.
Yeah, and you should. Get it out. You got 7 minutes. Get it out, get it over with. Suck it up, look back in the mirror. A friend of mine, she's the CEO, and she was talking to her coach. Her coach was the second in command to Mother Teresa, Sister Camilla, I think. And she lamented to the sister, I'm not here in my career, I thought it'd be this, I thought it'd be that. And the sister, all she said was, when was the last time you looked in the mirror and smiled at yourself? Oftentimes we look in the mirror, our career or path, we're like, I see crinkles, I see age spots, which I have. All these things, you're like, we find negative things when we look in that mirror. Smile, right? Get back up, suck it up, come on, right? But you know what? Recognize that it failed. Learn from it, grow from it, share it, right? And then, again, you're not living a life if you go without failure. That's not living life.
I think this is a good way to maybe end this.
Okay.
We talked about everything, but not my question.
Okay.
And I love that so much. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For being in my podcast. I think students, high school students, no, everyone, got something out of this podcast. Thank you so much. You're such an inspiring person. Wow. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh!
Is that good?
Yeah.
That was so good. That was horrible. No. I hope you enjoyed this podcast just as much as I did doing it. Thank you so much, Ed. I was so honored talking to you. And thank you so much for all the life advice you gave us. And thank you so much for you listening to this podcast. Follow us on Instagram, #iMakeAI. You can find us everywhere. Leave us a comment and a like, and we will see each other next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you.